Hellfire, written by James Holland, read by Saul Reichlin. The moral right of the author has been asserted. Cairo, August 1942. Chapter 1. Friday, the 7th of August, 1942, around 11 in the morning. The heat hung heavily over the city, like a shroud. However, in the first-floor flat just off Sharia el-Mahrabi, which was home to the Polish Red Cross, the air was close and certainly hot, but not oppressively so. In part, this was due to its position. Although east-facing, the apartment block stood in a small street behind the Continental Hotel. Since they were on the first floor, the grand 19th-century building shielded them from the worst of the morning sun, while by the afternoon it was almost entirely in the shade. The women had also worked out that by having the windows open, the shutters closed, and both overhead fans whirring at full speed, the heat was manageable. One of the fans squeaked irritatingly, and the draught they made caused loose paper to flap listlessly. But this was a small price to pay. The flat had four rooms, a living room, a single bedroom, a bathroom, and a small kitchen. It had been donated anonymously the previous October, when General Sikorsky had suggested that the few Polish ladies in Cairo set up their own Red Cross office. With countless Poles now freed from Russian internment, making their way south through the Soviet Union, then heading west towards the Middle East, it seemed only right that the tiny Polish contingent in Cairo should do what they could to help their countrymen. There were four full-time staff, led by Countess Sophie Tarnowska, and 10 volunteers. Work began early, before the heat of the day. That was when the packages were made up in the bedroom. Bundles of clothes, shoes, perhaps even some other basics, including tins of food, toothbrushes, and cigarettes. When this was done, the women would spend their time writing letters or purloining more supplies. As the central Allied hub in the Middle East, Cairo was about as well stocked with supplies as anywhere, but everything had to be donated. And there was a war on, and they were vying with the International Red Cross and numerous other charity organizations for what could be spared. They had quickly discovered that the personal touch worked best, collaring men of influence at parties or even making appointments to see them during the day. Face to face, a bit of flirting, a generous display of leg and cleavage, and determined eye contact made all the difference. It was because Sophie and her sister-in-law, Shuket, had just set off to see the new United States Assistant Military Attaché, and because the morning volunteers had already left, that only two of the staff remained in the flat. Both were at their desks in the main living room, writing letters to go into the packages. Boxes of goods filled the center of the room, giving it a cluttered air that the rest of its contents did not. Four differing tables made up as desks, four chairs, a tall metal filing cabinet on which stood a tray of drinks, and a small chest of drawers. A signed picture of Sikorsky and a map of Poland hung on the whitewashed walls, and that was it. Tanya Zanowski drew another piece of writing paper from the drawer in her desk and placed it in front of her. It was white, with a stark red cross at the top, headed Polski Czernowy Kryzys on one side and Polish Red Cross on the other. She paused for a moment and looked up towards the window. She could hear outside the endless hubbub of the city, the traffic, the horns, the muezzin making the call to prayer, his reedy, wailing voice carrying over the din. Yet the shutters muted the noise so that in the flat the air seemed quite still, despite the fans, so quiet that she could hear a fly buzzing noisily. She looked down again at the paper in front of her. "My brave fellow countrymen," she wrote, "please take heart that there are Poles..."
Sample complete. Ready to continue?